Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where, yes, it is actually is snowing today. Today on the program, we will be discussing, the Variety article that came out this week on WWE's Upfront in Brooklyn with advertisers, some interesting metrics that were raised by WWE executives, including Stephanie McMahon. And then on Monday, The Egg popped a rating. Vince McMahon's Cleopatra's Egg popped a rating on Raw. We will discuss that. The showdown at UBS Arena on Long Island, New York. It's coming soon. Part one coming up this week on Monday. WWE seems to have no weekly distributor of its regular programming in Japan in 2022. Fast Nationals. We will play the Fast Nationals game. GCW is selling out the Hammerstein Ballroom. And Christina Salen and WWE have come to a separation agreement. But first, joining me from my immediate south, the ring announcer, the stand-up comedian, Chris Gullo. Hello.
Hello. I'm actually surprised I still have a voice after announcing last night and doing a crazy main event introduction. So,
did you destroy your voice introducing?
A little bit.
Yes. What was the main event last night? We were both at this wrestling show last night.
Yeah, it was Daniel Garcia and Kevin Blackwood, and It was an awesome match.
Yes. I the people in the chat are saying boo the slow mode. They don't like slow mode. But yes, I was not wrestling. I was what would you say I was doing last night? Is there a
agenting,
I guess, producing, carrying out the wishes of one Brett Stimus, the promoter of ESW. But it was fine. It was good. That a very long and intense main event that'll be on IWTV for under the ESW category. The Bills won on Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Pretty big blowout
there.
Bills
game today.
In the Superdome, home of many big draws by the Junkyard Dog and people of that nature. So here's the image. For people watching on video, we will have visuals as always. So let us begin.
Yeah, we'll get right into it, Brandon. So this is from the Variety article in the TV news section. WWE touts massive reach and broad distribution in upfront presentation at Survivor Series. So before the in-ring action kicked off at Survivor Series at the Barclays Center on Sunday night, WWE hosted an upfront presentation for advertisers that laid out the company's wide appeal with audiences. We have massive reach and broad distribution available in over 900 million homes, 180 countries, 28 languages, and in a non-pandemic era, over 500 live events per year, said Stephanie McMahon, WWE's chief brand officer. This gives us the opportunity to engage with your brand globally, nationally, or locally.
I love it.
McMahon
when
went on, oh yeah,
that's fine. The, you want to break the blue line means stop talking.
Okay.
I love it when brands give us the opportunity to engage. I mean, that's one of the greatest things in life. So just one interesting thing here. We'll sort of go through a few of these paragraphs here. This is Variety's article. It's a byline from Joe Otterson, who often does the WWE articles here. 500 live events per year. Does this mean that WWE is going to, when the Florida Loop, this would have to include the Florida Loop if they thought that they were going to do 500 events again in the future, 100 or something like something probably well over 100, maybe 200 of those events are the NXT Florida Loop, which has not happened since, early 2020. And this would be with a full slate of house shows too. I've got to look, but I think the house shows are a little bit less frequent than they were, at least in 2019. But WWE decided to cut down on house shows in 2020 as well. Anyway, I don't see this number as reflecting any certainty in their plans. I think this is just, you know, let's put together a highlight reel of numbers that Stephanie McMahon can say, and they have some connection to reality. And I don't think this tells us that much with certainty about what the future will hold for WWE. In fact, I think just to go back to the NXT Florida Loop, is NXT going to return to running the Florida Loop? I don't know. I don't know why they're not already. Maybe there's concerns about COVID. Certainly with the new vision that they have about developmental, one would think that they would want to get wrestlers with little experience on the road, gaining that experience. But who knows? Who knows what the new NXT will bring?
9 of the top 15 most followed female athletes in the world across social platforms are WWE superstars. We are the number one most followed sports brand on TikTok. We are the number one sports channel on YouTube and the 6th most viewed channel on YouTube all around the world.
That sounds right.
And finally, we have a young, diverse fan base. She continued, over 75% of our fans are in that sweet spot, 18 to 49. 40% of our audience is women, and we over-index with both African-American and Hispanic audiences. Mm-hmm.
So 75% 18 to 49 set off some alarm bells for people, maybe including me. Certainly that doesn't reflect their linear TV audience, live and same day. That's about one third, or 34%, 35%, somewhere between the low 30, you know, like 31%, maybe they do 36%. Usually it's in that range for both Raw and SmackDown. Can tend to be on the lower end of that range for NXT. AEW, Dynamite, and Rampage tend to be about 50%, 18 to 49. So there's no, I wish there were some reference to what the number is that she's referring to. Presumably she's referring to all of WWE's engagement across all of its digital platforms and maybe linear platforms. Maybe it's all being tied in there. Maybe there's some survey that WWE has done and is referencing here, but we don't know. I mean, if you look at WWE's TV demographics, this idea that the vast majority of WWE's audience is really P50 plus, which flies in the face of any view of what their live audience looks like. If you go to a WWE live show, or to the extent to which I know they're choosing who to go to for fan reactions on TV, but it just doesn't look like there's many people in the audience who are that far over age 50. TV is old, and it's fun to react to ratings reports and make fun of how the WWE fan base, or particularly the NXT TV audience, is very old. But TV is old. People who consume linear TV just tend to be quite a bit older. We can talk about AEW in the same way. Do you really think half of the AEW fan base, whatever fan base means, but I think we have sort of a general idea of what fan base means. You really think half of the AEW fan base is over 50 years old? That doesn't really make sense, right? I mean, the median age of NXT for the last few weeks has been very close to or above 60 years old. That means half of the audience is above 60 years old. That's who's watching it live, same day. But who are the actual fans? Maybe the people who are susceptible to consuming some other NXT product, not just across linear TV, but across other things like Peacock or digital and social media. they're probably not half over the age of 50. So 75% of our fans are in 18 to 49. Sounds reasonable to me, but I wish there was some reference for what she's actually, that for the data that she's actually referring to. I asked WWE, they didn't respond to me. 40% of our audience is women. That's true. That's true in linear TV. We definitely see that when I get the numbers for 18 to 49 men and women, 40% women, 60% men. AEW is about 70% men, 30% women. So that's true in the old skewing live same day linear TV audience. I tend to think it's similar for other forms of media engagement, and maybe, you know, live event attendance. And we over-index with both African-American and Hispanic audiences, with some data that I saw that was looking at, I think, most of Q3 of this year. That definitely looks to be the case, that AEW's audience is right about on par with what the general linear TV audience is, but WWE over-indexes with African-American and Hispanic audiences. So that definitely checks out.
Formal remarks closed with WWE President Nick Khan in a Q&A with host Joe Tessitore. Khan spoke about WWE's recent decision to move some pay-per-view to Saturday nights, including the success they had with that strategy for SummerSlam in Las Vegas earlier this year, making the first time the event was held on a Saturday. In another first, WWE recently released their entire 2022 pay-per-view schedule. Khan said SummerSlam was also held in a stadium for the first time since 1992, something Khan said the company would be doing more going forward. For the first time in 2022, we're going to do 5 nights at stadiums, he added. He said, typically, Royal Rumble and WrestleMania have been stadium events. We saw a gap in the marketplace where we can do more. Khan also discussed rights fees for major sports programming, such as the NFL, NHL, and Premier League Soccer. The NFL is, of course, the leader, with the rights now worth $10 billion in the most recent 11-year deal. With the NHL, Khan pointed out that a decade ago, the Hockey League commanded approximately $200 million per year, whereas now it's worth $625 million a year. Khan then posited that the English Premier League NBC deal is worth $460 million and not the reported $450 million. You're seeing these numbers continue to grow, he said. You're seeing them go up for properties. Ratings are up for properties whose ratings are stable, and even for properties whose ratings are down.
Yes. Great success means great profit. Mediocre success means profit still. Yeah. Nikon just reporting that it's not just $450 million, but $460 million between the EPL and NBCU. Yeah, I mean, I think the deal with the Premier League and NBC Universal, as we discussed last week, it is a, I think, nearly a tripling, 2.8x increase in the U.S. TV rights fees for EPL, and I think WWE rightly views that as encouraging for the potential value that they'll be able to get in their upcoming negotiations, even though ratings are going down. I had a discussion with MJ from NJ, who's in the chat, last night, about, well, if viewership continues to go down, I don't know, is there a point where WWE starts to see their TV rights value diminish? I'm not sure, because WWE's rank among other programs, its performance among programming generally hasn't trended down. I think that's something that we discussed last week. If we just look at the viewership spreadsheet, I think I have a tab here where we look at things by year, and even though WWE's, you know, even 18 to 49 audience has fallen roughly in half from where it was just a few years ago. Let's say, you know, if we look at the rating, which is not exactly people, but it's a percentage of the national 18 to 49 audience for Raw. In 2015, the average PTN49 rating for Raw was 1.25. And we're almost through the entire year of 2021. And it's, you know, well less than a half of that. What is, it's averaging 0.51. So 0.51 as a percentage of 1.25 is, it's at about 41%. So you could say about 60% of what WWE had in a PG-49 rating in 2015 has fallen off. It, more than half of that audience is no longer watching live same day through linear TV. Nonetheless, that rank, if we look at, I think I have it in here, that cable rank on Monday, they were ranking number 3 in 2015. That was their, is this a median? This is their median rank. Their median rank in 2016 was number 4. Their median rank in 2017 was number 3. So again, what I'm trying to show here is while this number, the audience, the volume of their audience has gone down by, it went down 9%, went down 8%, went down 7% in 2019. It really went down even stronger than the rate of television decline overall, went down 17%. But their rank among cable originals on their day on Monday has not moved. In fact, their median rank so far in 2021, of course, it's not been so great during NFL season, but their median rank is number 1 because they have that. Maybe it'll get under 1 just because we'll have another month to go here where they'll be going against Monday Night Football and all the programming around Monday Night Football that ranks very highly and often above Raw. But their rank has not moved. If anything, well, you know, some years it's improved, just reflective of all the other programming on television, or in this case on Monday nights among cable originals, that has diminished at least as much as Raw has. And Raw is still able to rank highly. Why does that matter for their TV rights fees? Because it seems to me that networks are continuing to value more so today than yesterday, more so this year than 5 or 10 years ago. They need their most popular programs to justify the subscriptions that cable customers still pay for, to justify the ad revenues, the ad sales that they're able to make to advertisers in an environment where MVPD subs, that is cable and satellite subscriptions, are declining. In an environment where large audiences are harder and harder to find, even though the volume of those large audiences is diminishing, you know, they're falling in half in the case of Raw and in over the course of just a few years. But they're the most popular programs seem to be growing in value to networks, despite the decline of those audiences. And in fact, they're becoming even more valuable because there are fewer and fewer programs that are able to capture a live audience in the way that Raw is, in the way that SmackDown is, in the way that the NFL and the NBA are, and somewhat comparably, AEW programming is. So there's that.
All right. And we'll be moving on here to the fight for Long Island, I like to call it here. And we have some updates here as far as from WrestleTix. We'll start with Monday Night Raw, which this is a WrestleTix report, and this is as of the 27th here. So available tickets, 2,094. With a setup capacity of 7,169, so about 71% of the tickets distributed, so 5,075 tickets distributed, and Edge was just announced for this show as well. And then and they're still doing that deal, the 2-for-1 tickets, which actually ended yesterday, but it was a 2-for-1 tickets there for Monday Night Raw, where you get 2 tickets for the price of 1.
Yes. So usually, I don't know, Raw and Dynamite ticket price seems to be similar. I don't know that we'll ever get any facts about it, but you know, if Raw is bringing in 5,000 people. It'll surely be a little bit higher by Monday. But and then Dynamite seems to be bringing in well over 8,500 people. Most of that will be paid in both cases. But yeah, I don't know. I was going to say that, you know, with the average ticket price probably being lower for Raw than for Dynamite, just from WWE trying to do everything it can to get these tickets distributed, that the gate for Dynamite would be higher, but that seems to be the case regardless, just by virtue of the attendance probably going to be that much higher for Dynamite. I wonder how much WWE cares about this comparison. They probably do. That's why we're seeing these moves of, you know, putting tickets on sale, you know, discounted tickets, 2-for-1. Edge has been added. I don't know that that's purely motivated by this comparison, the same venue at UBS Arena. There's probably larger plans involved with having Edge back. Looking forward to another Edge monologue, hopefully, on Monday night. Yeah, it's something that WWE probably cares about. And it's not just for people like us to say, you know, and talk to wrestling fans who can compare AEW and WWE's performance. But there's probably business partners who will notice this as well, which is really who they care about. So it's one data point, and maybe there's a few others that are showing something similar, in that WWE obviously has a much larger TV audience. They obviously have a much larger audience in a number of other ways, including on social media, including on YouTube and things like that. These are all, you know, engaging on social media, watching on linear TV. These are things that are not at a high specific cost to the consumer. Things that are at a high specific cost to the consumer, including ticket sales. Mainly ticket sales is what we have visibility to. That's where we're seeing, in some cases, more favorable comparisons for AEW versus WWE. You know, we don't have visibility really into merchandise, but the volume of events for WWE and for merchandise for WWE is so much higher than AEW. But yeah, I think we're starting to see. We don't have a pay per view like to like comparison, because obviously WWE doesn't do pay per view in the traditional way as AEW does. But yeah, we're seeing in some ways where friction, not just inconvenience, but where money has to be parted with. I think we're starting to see this sort of hardcore fandom that is purported to not matter start to emerge to matter a little bit more over time.
I want to ponder this question to you here while we're still on this topic.
Please do.
WWE has been very cost effective, especially in the Khan era. If something doesn't make sense, it's kind of, you know, budget cuts. We see how they've scaled the roster back and all that. Now, obviously, they have to have a live audience for Raw and SmackDown. I'm not getting to that point, but like, if popularity continues to drop with live attendance, you know, in this quarter and then maybe the first quarter of 2022, do they really actually scale back house shows and say, hey, this isn't cost effective to run this if we're not drawing what we expect? Or do they still do it to say, hey, look, we have so many live events and this and that, and brand?
Yeah, just counting the live events is something that I need to follow more closely. Are they running the same number of live events that they were running in the summer? They're running the same number of house shows specifically. Obviously, they're still going to run Raw and SmackDown every week. But are they running the same number of house shows now as they were in the summer? I know in the summer, they even canceled one house show. I think it was the Gainesville, Florida house show. In 2020, before the pandemic, they did significantly cut down on house shows. I see no reason to not expect that house show business won't, or maybe we could look into it, hasn't already leveled off and calmed back down. Definitely there was pent-up demand that benefited them. They did really well in Q3, the first quarter, with ticketed fans back on the road. They did really well then, and that business has definitely leveled off to some degree. And I think it will go back to roughly the level that it was at in late 2019 and the couple months before the pandemic in 2020. And then it will probably make sense, if it hasn't already, to cut down on some house shows that have value in a number of ways beyond just the revenue that they generate directly, both in terms of ticket sales and merchandise. Yes, they have value in terms of giving the wrestlers experience. Yes, they have value in terms of promoting the product in a given town. But I don't know that a business that is so much a video business, a media business, that's where I think more than half of their revenue is coming from. And it's going to be increasing, that portion is going to increase over time just because their TV rights fees escalate over time. And when they sign a new TV deal, it'll probably be an upgrade, and that'll increase the portion even more over whatever revenue that they are getting from ticket sales and from consumer products. So I think I would expect that we will see house shows cut back on a bit. I mean, ideally you want to be in a situation where if you could draw, 8,000 people to a venue and it was the same venue every week, if you could, run TV out of the performance center somehow and save all that money again. I don't think we're going to see that. I think if nothing else, even if it would be more cost effective to make a deal with, I don't know, Disney World or some pipe dream like that and run TV every week out of a central location or something like that, Nick Khan would probably find a place in Las Vegas for WWE to run every week. But
I was just going to bring that up, like have a daily show. It kind of replaces the Florida Loop for NXT and maybe some of the things, and you have like live WWE wrestling every day and, at the Bellagio, whatever.
If nothing else, the ego of having to be a company, I mean, maybe there's real economic business partnership perception there too. If like, why aren't you touring? They used to tour the country and the world, and now they don't. I could see that being an issue that is of real value and of real economic meaning for WWE and its business partners. I think WWE will continue to tour, and there's a number of subtle values in that, including in doing house shows, which it seems they're going to continue to do. I don't know that doing house shows really makes sense for this company anymore, but it's something that they've always done and that they, I think will always do as long as Vince McMahon's alive.
All right. If I don't want to touch on any more here on the AEW Rampage stuff, or we want to move on.
No, we got it.
Okay. All right, so moving on here, you were discussing TV deals. Well, J Sports in Japan has put out a notice that it will no longer be carrying Raw and SmackDown after the end of the year. The Japanese broadcaster has been airing Raw and SmackDown in both English and Japanese subtitled versions, along with highlight shows, all of which will end effective December 27th. The WWE pack on the J Sports On Demand service will expire on January 31st, 2022. WWE and J Sports have had a relationship for over two decades and have announced an extension on their deal in December 2018. The deal included live airings of Raw and SmackDown, along with one-hour highlight shows on each program, as well as the ability to order the monthly pay-per-views on the on-demand service.
Yes, this is from Post Wrestling, as indicated by the Post Wrestling watermark that people on video can see here. I think it's from John Pollock.
How big is J Sports reach out? I'm not familiar with Japanese TV. Like what would you compare it?
I don't know.
Is it a top network? Or?
My impression is that Japanese television is still very much, most of it is still terrestrial TV or still what we would call broadcast TV. That's why we've seen, they haven't had sort of the cable television boom that has happened in the US, for whatever reason. Some of this has to do with zoning or something like that. That's why we've seen, in the history of Japanese TV, how in the history of Japanese wrestling, how being on TV Asahi for New Japan was the big deal, because TV Asahi is a major broadcaster, Fuji Television in the case of All Japan Women, NTV in the case of All Japan and NOAH. These are programs that were on broadcast TV, and there aren't this vast number of cable programs that have high reach in Japan. has always been my impression. Obviously, there's things like Samurai TV, this 24-hour pro wrestling network, but that has a very limited reach. But yeah, it's I don't know that WWE has a new distributor for television in Japan lined up here. So I don't know. I mean, New Japan has ranked more highly than WWE in Google web search, I think, you know, throughout the entire 2004 to present. Maybe not in the really dark time for New Japan, but New Japan is definitely the most popular wrestling brand in Japan, more so than WWE. But WWE doesn't seem to have another TV distributor lined up. I did ask WWE about this. They didn't get back to me either about whether or not they have another distribution partner lined up for Japan. So it's we've seen WWE go to the Budokan. I think they went to the Budokan, and did they go to Sumo Hall as well in the last several years? Obviously, they've made an effort to make major signings like Shinsuke Nakamura and Asuka, who are from Japan. I just don't know what the international thoughts are under Nikon now. I mean, those were moves, at least in the case of the signing of Nakamura and Kana, that happened way back in the George Berrios era around 2016 or so. Does WWE still plan to, there were rumors that NXT Japan might happen. Maybe WWE would acquire one of the existing Japanese wrestling companies. That does not seem like something that's going to happen at this point. Does WWE really still intend to execute global localization as Triple H once stood on the stage before business partners and had the NXT logos all over the world? I don't think that that's happening in the same way, or that it makes sense for it to happen. Yeah, NXT UK still exists, and I should ask somebody who knows something, knows more about UK labor law, that it's conspicuous, isn't it, that all these names have been cut from NXT and from WWE main roster for that matter, but NXT UK has not been touched. I imagine there's some sort of legal limitation there that's explaining that. I would guess that WWE feels that, why did we do this NXT UK thing? It's an expense for us. Yes, it served as a bulwark for World of Sport, and we got to swallow up Progress and ICW in the process. So maybe, yeah, there was some benefit there, but I don't know what the continued value is in having that there.
Well, I mean, the NXT UK thing has blown my mind that there has been any, just even a couple like releases and all that. And they did just open that performance center not too long ago. I mean, it's like a scaled down version of what they have in Orlando. But what do you think the deals, and I don't know if we have any contract really information, but are the deals maybe like exclusive contracts, but appearance deals? So it's not like you're really paying out a weekly salary. Like, it's just, if we book you, you get this. But we hold your exclusive
rights. It's probably a very low downside. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but I would guess that it's very low downside. And then, yeah, maybe if you're used, we pay you more. And when I say low downside, I mean like, you know, a very low living wage. You know, for a lower middle class living wage, probably something like that. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Moving on, I've been working, and when we are working right now, as I was showing Gullo before we went live here, that I am right at this moment. Oh no, there's been an error. My script has failed because I have the Excel spreadsheet open. That's why it failed. But anyway, I've been using Python to scrape a number of data resources. Basically, my long-term plan here is which I've been doing since for about a year here. I got a Python ebook for Christmas last year, and a couple months after I got it, I finally started to read it and practice with it. And I've been doing some scripting of Python, which is a programming language. And now, one of the things that I wanted to do when we first, when I first started doing this is use it to scrape all this data that is on the internet. All this great data is on the internet from sources like Google Trends, most obviously. Cage Match is this awesome resource of match results. Showbuzz Daily has all of this TV ratings data. I report some of it. There's a website called Social Blade that has a lot of social media data. Just last week, I think we discussed how I was scraping the Wikipedia personnel lists to get an idea over time of what WWE's roster count was. So I've spent the last year or so writing a lot of different scripts, probably very inefficiently. So of late, what I've been doing is taking these scripts. I don't know if this will make any sense to anybody, but turning them into functions so that they are easy to manipulate in terms of, say, I want to scrape a certain year of cage match results. All I got to do is change a number and then run it. Boom. It goes and grabs all of that data. So I'm figuring out how to not only take these scripts, but to turn them into functions that can just have certain parameters changed easily, and they can go and scrape a variety of data pretty efficiently and easily. And then what I want to do is schedule all of these scripts to run periodically so that they keep a running collection of all the data. So one of the challenges is that, yes, we have all this great data out here. And I think this is something that was a current to me for a long time, is that, yes, you can look up, for example, what a given video has in terms of a view count on YouTube. You can look at somebody's match count on Cage Match. But really harnessing this data in a way that becomes insightful and useful, and to make useful comparisons and to collect this data over time, to compare it in a sensible way, that's harder. But if we're able to write all these scripts and then schedule them on a recurring basis, we can keep a sort of a track of this data. And eventually, my idea is to generate CSV files, which are basically just primitive basic Excel files, and then to load these CSV files into Excel spreadsheets, and then create the WrestleNomics charts and tables and things of that nature. So we can just look real quick here. For those who are watching on video, we can look at what I'm going to do. My plan is to do with YouTube data. What I'm doing with YouTube is not going to Social Blade, but going to the YouTube page itself. And if I have a tab here called All Top for the Last 7 Days, where I'm going to the WWE YouTube page, going to the AEW YouTube page. I'm going to those pages every hour, every single hour on the hour. The WrestleNomics supercomputer runs a script, and it looks at the WWE YouTube page. It looks at the AEW YouTube page, and it counts the number of views that not every video on their channel has, but the ones that are visible on like page one. And what I want to do is you can talk about YouTube videos, the views for YouTube videos, but it's hard to know how to talk about them in a really fair way. I can look at the video page, and I can sort the WWE YouTube channel by the most popular video. But all of those videos have different ages, if you will. So what I want to do is say somewhere around 16 hours after publishing, what was the count? And this is what we have for this is I haven't refreshed it. I would refresh it, but it would take a second. But this is like, as of the other day, these are the top 20 most viewed YouTube videos that were published within the last 7 days for WWE and AEW. The most viewed video after 16 hours. So trying to be fair here and not just say, because you know, these are published at all different times, but we're giving everybody the same amount of time to collect views. And number one, acknowledge him is Roman Reigns, a clip from SmackDown last week. So this is about a day old, but from SmackDown last week, an angle with King Woods and Big E and Roman Reigns and the Bloodline that did over 1 million views 16 hours after publishing. Number two is a top 10 highlight video of SmackDown in its entirety. And then number three is this CM Punk and MJF angle where they did their big promo on Dynamite. So just things like that. That's, I mean, like ultimately long term for the sake of WrestleNomics, is the idea is to generate reports like this. And maybe this is something that becomes part of another tier on Patreon for WrestleNomics readers and listeners.
I find it very interesting that the highlight recap videos are like some of the top videos on there, because I think a lot of the audience probably just consumes that on YouTube other than watching Raw and SmackDown.
Right.
Like, oh, I'll just see what happened. You know,
and that's part of what I want to look at here, or could be looked at here, is that, you know, as people will remind me on Twitter when I report the ratings sometimes, well, nobody watches TV anymore. All right. Well, let's see if we can take a look at YouTube views and look at how many views they're getting. Okay. Well, that's just a data point out of context, but let's look at this over time. Are there certain weeks, and I'll figure out how to analyze this hopefully in a meaningful way, but are there certain weeks where the views are really high or the views are lower? Are there certain segments? It's sort of like a quarter hour stand-in, you know? And I think it's more fair than quarter hours, in fact, to look at these segments. Quarter hours are complicated by the fact that they include commercials, by the fact that they include other segments within your 15-minute period, by the fact that they include, well, I guess the YouTube video also includes other people, but it's one segment per video. It's not two or three segments per 15 minutes. And it doesn't include the commercial as part of that measurement. But if I just refreshed it. And if we look at now, only last 7 days, now the CM Punk and MJF video, because we don't have any SmackDown measured here yet, because I don't think we're quite 16 hours away from SmackDown having happened as we record this right now. So we're only looking at Dynamite and Raw for the most part here. And but I guess we could say that the CM Punk and MJF video, which after 16 hours did 823,000 views, has outperformed every Raw clip after 16 hours of those videos publishing time. But I mean, it's that one AEW video and then 18 WWE videos after that before we find the next AEW video, which in this case is AEW Dark. So I don't know if I just analyze this in a perfect way, but first we get the data, and then this is just a sort of a sneak preview. First we get the data, and then I work on trying to make sense of this data.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
All right, we're going to move on to Fast Nationals.
Yes.
And we we'll start here. Andrew Zarian reported AEW Dynamite Fast Nationals 809,000 with an 18-49, 344,000. And that's because obviously we didn't have the actual ratings, official ratings come out because of the Thanksgiving holiday. And then Brandon, you touched on Twitter, based on these Fast Nationals for Dynamite, I would expect final ratings releasing Monday, total 855,000, down 15%, 375,000, 18-49, which would be a 0.29, 18-49 rating, which would be down 22%.
Yes.
And then for SmackDown and Rampage, based on the Fast Nationals, your estimate for the finals would be SmackDown 2.08 million with a 0.56 and 18-49. And then Rampage would be 425,000 with a 0.19 in the 18-49. That would be the lowest total and second lowest demo for Rampage yet. SmackDown would be close to last week, which would be the lowest P2 plus in months.
Yes.
Which was a little
sad. Never pass up an opportunity to report Fast Nationals at a time like a holiday. But the Dynamite rating was way down. It was the night before Thanksgiving and the night after Thanksgiving in the case of Rampage. Dynamite ratings have been on the low side lately. Maybe some of that is due to the NHL live broadcasts causing a broadcast out of prime time on the West Coast. A lot of it probably, too, is coming off of the peak in interest that followed the debuts of CM Punk and Bryan Danielson. I have people asking me, being more alarmed than I am about whether or not this is a problem for the content and whether, you know, what do they need to do to respond to the ratings are down. I think, well, part of it is the NHL effect and airing out of prime time in the Mountain time range and even more so the Pacific time zone. This was around a holiday where you probably had some people traveling around and having other things to do other than watch wrestling on television live and same day. We'll see what happens this coming week when things are back to normal. But I expect that Dynamite, at least not Rampage. Rampage is not affected by airing out of prime time. But Dynamite will continue to, I don't know, hover in this 900,000 viewer range. I would expect it to do better than this 800,000 viewer range, but we'll hover around this 900,000 viewer range for the rest of the year as it is broadcast on the same night as the NHL every week for the rest of the year until Dynamite moves to TBS. There's that. The Rampage rating will be the second lowest rating ever, probably. What did I say here? It'll be the lowest total and it'll be the second lowest ever in P18-49 since August, since its debut in August. The SmackDown rating is very similar, it looks like, to what it did last week. Well, last week was the lowest, I believe it was the lowest total audience. Yes, it was the lowest total audience since August. So what's the meaning of that? I don't know. This was, again, in the case of SmackDown, this was the Friday after Thanksgiving. Maybe some people had better things to do than watch SmackDown on Fox. But we'll see what happens next week to see if these data points continue to show a trend of is SmackDown now going to flirt with this 2 million viewers milestone? Or is it going to go back up to the 2.1 that it was at before and getting into the 0.60 range in the demo? We'll see.
See a lot of promotion from it from Fox. I watched the Bears Lions game on Fox for Thanksgiving, and a lot of promotion for SmackDown.
That's right. And that's one of the things that was hyped here is that they're going to have these partnerships that will help WWE get more promotion during sports, and they've said the same thing for NBC Universal is that they're going to promote WWE more during sports games. That's what we're seeing. Is it going to translate into viewership? I doubt it.
I haven't really seen anything on the NBC Universal side of things.
Yeah. I think there was like a center who has the NASCAR rights. Is NBC have? I don't know. Anyway, maybe that's Fox too. But
yeah,
Excellent. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, I don't see. I mean, it helps. Maybe ratings would be even lower if not for for these reminders that W programming is on these networks. But you know, in lieu of short term hotshots like Cleopatra's egg, I don't see WWE doing more to pop the ratings or to have a real sustained increase in ratings. But let's talk about what happened to WWE Raw's ratings on Monday night.
All right, here, yeah. And if we look at it here, Raw doing 1.7 million in the P2 Plus with a 0.49, 18 to 49. If you look over previous 28 days, that's a they were averaging 1.62 with a 0.44. So that was a nice increase, 5% on the P2, 11% on 18 to 49 over 28 days. NXT did 625,000 with a 0.14 in 18 to 49. Compare that to 28 days, you know, very similar number, 617 in the P2 Plus with a 0.15 in 18 to 49. They have a 1% increase in P2, but negative 3. In the 1849 over 28 days.
Yes. So the Raw rating was up 11% in 1849. So they popped a decent rating here. If we look at, do I have a chart here? I do have a chart here. For those watching on YouTube, you can visually see how high that 1849 number was relative to recent weeks. It was the highest 1849 since early in the NFL season. Earlier in 2021, though, they were doing better, but this was the best 1849 they had done in many weeks. So got to give it up to Cleopatra's Egg. Cleopatra's Egg was just part of the promotion for what is that Dwayne Johnson movie called?
Red Notice. Right?
Red Notice, which is on Netflix, I understand. Lots of apparent teasing that that Dwayne Johnson would appear in some capacity, maybe on Survivor Series, not on Raw. He didn't appear on Raw either. And it was interesting to see how, for one thing, how this was clearly an advertisement for the Netflix movie on Sunday. It was more so just a plot device on Monday. I don't know that Red Notice was mentioned on Monday. Chris Cole, I know you're an avid viewer of Monday Night Raw. You watch every minute of it, right? I
know the egg was a giant storyline, but I don't know if they actually named the movie. But the egg was a big storyline on Monday.
So the product placement. So this egg, neither of us have seen the movie. But apparently this egg is something that's in the movie, right? So this was another great opportunity to create activations across our platforms, much like the zombies, where everyone remembers the zombies fondly, only fond memories of the zombies are allowed. That promoted what the hell did the zombies promote? I forget now. Some Batista movie, right? Also on Netflix.
The Batista zombie movie, yeah, something of the dead, or yeah,
Return so of the dead. Armies of the Dead, I think it was called.
Yeah.
So clearly Netflix or somebody's happy enough with how the zombies went that they decided to do this too. And hey, look, there's the Batista connection to WWE. There's the Rock connection to WWE here. We hear murmurings that, oh, they got seven figures for this. Who knows what they got for it? They probably got paid kindly for it though. And they got to integrate, this into their storyline. Now, if you watch Survivor Series, I did watch Survivor Series. Did you watch Survivor Series, Chris Colo?
Just highlights of it.
How dare you? Shame on you for not watching Survivor Series. Consume
more of the current product.
You should consume more of that content. Work harder next time on consuming that content. But this was not the only product placement. It's not the only integration of our partners' brands into our content. No. There was a certain pizza brand that was promoted heavily in a battle royal. The Dwayne Johnson Memorial Battle Royal that did not feature Dwayne Johnson, commemorating 25 years of The Rock's debut. Since The Rock's debut at Survivor Series 1996, which also played into The Rock hype. Rock did not appear personally on the pay-per-view, but they promoted Pizza Hut, and there was pizza all over this battle royal. So Pizza Hut, the Yum, which is part of the Yum brand, right? Probably very happy with how this came off. I think there's a cost to this that is subtle, but at least for some people, I think there's an unintrusive way to do this, maybe, and then there's an intrusive way to do this, which is what I at least maybe not so much the egg thing, but definitely this Pizza Hut thing was just ridiculous.
Well, we go back to the water bottle thing and yes. SummerSlam. Like it's perfect the same example. Type of thing. Like it's product placement that just maybe it's not being executed in the best manner.
They love their brands, okay, and they're not ashamed to show it. But when the WQ3 earnings call happened, one of the more memorable highlights among all the exciting details and things that were said on that call was Stephanie highlighting how, you know, can Patrick Mahomes, you know, the NFL is so great, but can Patrick Mahomes, you know, spray down everybody with a super soaker of Nestle Pure Life water? They can't, but you can in WWE. And that's one of the, they see as their great selling points is that, you know, yeah, the NFL and the NBA and all these other programs, they can advertise your product, but we can integrate your product into the content. What do fans think about this? No. What do fans? Nope. It's not about what fans think. It's about what our business partners think. And that's the most important thing, because that's where we get most of our money.
By the way, I don't know about you, but I was already thinking of what Stephanie would say in the Q4 conference call about the red notice.
Now you're thinking in the right way. That's how WWE content is meant to be consumed. I think let's think about how can this be presented to advertisers, business partners, executives, and investors about how, wow, look at our brand and look, you got to think about, you got to stop thinking about how the fans are going to react live in attendance. We're going to wash over them with our audio editing and sound sweetening anyway. But you got to think about what is that advertising and sponsorships line going to do under the media division? That's where W really has the opportunity to grow. It's not about creating new fans. We haven't been able to figure that out for some 10 years. But where we can grow is with our beloved business partners. That was TV ratings. Hey, the egg was successful for them in the short term. And will Edge pop a rating? We'll see.
How much of it is just Vince being back on TV in a role like that? I think this might be the longest he's been on TV.
Yeah. That was a lot of TV for Vince. And I wonder if that was part of the pitch too, is in that like Vince will promote this himself and that'll be a big deal. And whoa, Netflix loved that or something. And Netflix is doing this Vince documentary. So they're maybe a little bit more aware of Vince than usual. One can imagine such things. Ratings are delayed though, because of Thanksgiving. They will be delayed again around Christmas time. So we didn't have Dynamite ratings on Thursday, so I didn't do a live TV ratings talk. Thank God that we got Fast Nationals on Friday. I don't know what we would have done. We would have been hankering and not getting our ratings fixed. We would have been having to scratch our necks and whatnot. But Fast Nationals came out, so we do have an impression of what the Dynamite rating will be. But we'll be getting Dynamite ratings Monday, which is tomorrow as we record this, Monday afternoon. The Wednesday ratings will come out Tuesday morning. The Thursday ratings will come out, including Impact. Tuesday afternoon. That's when the Friday finals will come out for Rampage and SmackDown. And then Wednesday morning, we'll get caught up on the last of it. That's when the Raw rating will come out. So the Raw rating will not be out on Tuesday afternoon. It'll be out the following morning on Wednesday morning. And then we'll be caught up. Rest assured, things will be back to normal on Wednesday afternoon for the release of the NXT ratings. By the way, I've put in the chat, if anybody wants to ask a question here,
yes,
we will, we might field some Q&A.
Well, the question that was asked is going to tie into our next topic.
So. Okay. So should we discuss the next topic first?
Yeah, let's do that. So the Young Bucks will not be leaving AEW for a foreseeable future. And this, of course, is from Post Wrestling. According to a report in the Wrestling Observer newsletter, the popular team has signed contract extensions with AEW. Later in the day, the site clarified that the two have signed contract extensions rather than new contracts. The original report had stated they signed through 2026, although it's since been corrected with the Observer site stating that the extensions are for 2 years each. The Young Bucks posted the following in their Twitter bio, till 2024, let's party for two more years.
Yes. I think it raises questions about what's the timing? Is there similar timing for other EVPs or others who were early signings for AEW? You know, I don't know the answer to the question. I don't know that anybody is going to publicly answer the question, but what's the term of Cody's contract? What's the term of the Kenny Omega contract? How close even was this contract to expiring? I don't know. But we are at, you know, it was January 2019 when they signed. So 19, 20, 22, maybe they were 3 year contracts. I don't know.
And the question we have in the chat is, and this is from Ryoga316. With the Young Bucks extending their contracts, does this also apply to those who have full-time Tier 3, 4 contracts in AEW if they choose that option over renewing their contracts?
What is this? Can you explain this to me?
So I think what he's kind of asking is this something extensions instead of renewing contracts is something that would be maybe pursued for other talents in the Tier 3, 4. So probably not the top tier, but lower cards.
Does this also apply to those who have full-time contracts in AEW if they choose that option? I'm not sure what this question means. Do you understand the question?
Oh, like I said, I think what it's phrased a little weird, but I think what he's asking is like, is extensions instead of renewals something that they'll do for maybe the lower tier contracts, full-time talent?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. All right. And we will anything else on this? I just, you know, I'm not surprised on this. I don't think anybody really is. No. So.
No. And then I think in the case of the Young Bucks, Cody, at least those two, maybe Kenny's different, but their most valuable to AEW and their, you know, the notion of going to WWE or going to New Japan, I guess. They're not as valuable there unless WWE wants to overpay for them for the sake of taking them away. There's value for WWE in taking stars away from AEW. But the thing that WWE has going against itself, if it wants to do that, is that these people know that they're not going to be creatively fulfilled there. So there's that.
All right, we'll move on here. And if you want to get into the Russell Tix tweet, or I can.
So GCW, Game Changer Wrestling, is running the Hammerstein Ballroom in the Manhattan Center on January 23rd next year. And they have sold out the building. Apparently, over 2,000 tickets are distributed. And we've got some more notes from Post Wrestling.
Yep. So GCW sells out Hammerstein Ballroom. Game Changer Wrestling has sold out the Hammerstein Ballroom for its show on January 23rd, 2022, with the company announcing the achievement on Friday morning. The show is expected to have over 2,000 fans in attendance as the promotion scaled the building to break prior sellout marks in pro wrestling in the building. It's a huge accomplishment for the group, given no matches have been announced, and it's based on the buzz of the company and the idea that this will be a historic event for the promotion the fans want to be part of, which has traditionally been a major factor when it comes to drawing. The next question will be the promotion and what it can generate on pay-per-view through Fight TV at this event would have to be in contention for GCW's most purchased of all time.
Yeah, we'll probably never hear of it, though. It's, you know, Fight TV's numbers are certainly not publicly reported, and I mean, if they were a publicly traded company, it's not like they would be giving in individual sales of individual events. But it could very well be their most sold pay-per-view yet. I guess the question that is interesting to think about here, what is the number three wrestling company in the US? WAW, who's number three?
Yeah, I think that question is, if you just look at current popularity, would it be Game Changer? I mean, Ring of Honor, obviously we know what's going on there. Impact, I mean, they're selling out the Sam's Town Casino in Las Vegas, but that's not a lot of fans. It's like 700, I think, or something. Mm-hmm. And MLW is doing okay, but still not consistent touring. NWA, I think they might still be doing, I don't even know if they're doing fans on their studio tapings. I could be wrong with that. I'm not sure. But GCW, constant buzz. You've seen, Matt Cardona, John Moxley, and others like create kind of viralness on social media with doing stuff with them. So, and the Briscoes. And
yeah, then there's a big difference between GCW and all those the other companies that you've just mentioned, in that GCW is an independent company. What do I mean by that? This is a very non-technical term at this point, I guess, but like they're an indie wrestling company. NWA is not an indie wrestling company. Impact certainly is not an indie wrestling company in the same sense that I mean right now. MLW, NWA, Impact are not indie wrestling companies in the way that GCW is an indie wrestling company. And because they're not, maybe in some ways it's harder for them to get this surge of grassroots fandom. They're all those other companies that we just mentioned, whatever they are, Impact, MLW, NWA, maybe there's others that we could rope in here too. They're coming to this probably appropriately from sort of a media distribution approach, right? Like we've talked about a number of times here, the pro wrestling business is not that viable as just a live event business. It's more viable if you can sell media of some form to somebody. And WWE and AEW are the biggest beneficiaries and examples of that. The majority of their revenue comes from media, comes from the broadcasts of their events. But GCW, they're in the media business too, clearly. They're selling pay-per-views through Fight TV. They were involved with IWTV. There's clearly some legal dispute happening there. But this is a company that tours around the country and does these sort of smaller scale live events in a way that none of those other companies are. Certainly in terms of zeitgeist or buzz, GCW has the strongest trajectory and momentum in that way. Yes.
One thing I think they do too is they really identity of talents. And I mean by that is like they're a lot of their talent works other independents, but like they really put them in the forefront. Like when you think Effie, you think Game Changer Wrestling. When you think Nick Gage, you think Game Changer Wrestling. When you think Alley Catch, you think Game Changer Wrestling, AJ Grace. And it's something that really no other independent companies do. Like I don't identify like one wrestler, like, oh yeah, that guy is solely this independent company, but you'll do that with these Game Changer talents, even if they work other places. And I think that's something that they do on a whole different level, not any other independents. Very ECW-esque, which people compare them to.
And
like 1995 ECW.
The wrestlers who you just mentioned there, we were talking a moment ago about I'm scraping all this data. One of the things that I want to look at in the cage match data is who are the wrestlers who are wrestling for the greatest variety of promotions in given periods of time, such as the year of 2021. And in the preliminary scrapes that I've done so far, you see at the top of the list of people, wrestlers who have wrestled for the greatest variety of promotions, at least reflected in the cage match data, are wrestlers like Effie and AJ Gray and Alley Catch and people like that. So it's wrestlers who are not, I don't know that you could say similar for the wrestlers who are most associated with MLW, NWA, Impact, and companies of that nature, for whatever that's worth. I don't know. And maybe we come to this with a sort of indie wrestling myopia. Is that the right word? Myopic? Yeah. But yeah. Oh, disclose yourself. Have you ever worked for GCW?
Yes.
What did you do for GCW?
I did a referee bump spot in a Joey Janela cluster.
Cluster? Is that the full, was that the full name of the match?
No, it was a clusterfuck. 2019 spring break. Basically, a bunch of refs were getting beat up by female talents. I took some very stiff kicks that night. And
you took stiff kicks?
So, no, they looked stiff. They weren't really stiff. They looked stiff.
from who?
Solo Darling.
Oh,
okay. She was light as a feather, but like a buddy of mine was like in the show. He goes, "Are you okay?" Like, yes. Like they looked, okay. You know.
What year is this?
2019.
Ah, the good old days.
Yeah.
So that's the only time you worked for Game Changer?
Only time I worked for Game Changer.
Okay. Interesting. I've never worked for Game Changer. Yeah. Okay. Moving on.
All right, moving on. And
SEC. Look at this SEC seal.
Yeah, you have that.
That's important. That is a very important detail. Right. For those watching on video, you can see the giant eagle, the U.S. Securities and Exchanges Commission seal, which was founded in whatever number that is in Roman numerals there. So we have a disclosure from the Securities and Exchanges Commission. I'll just say that you can read it in a moment. But we had on Friday, you can sign up for email alerts. From WWE's investor relations website, and a lot of those things come out on Friday, you know, afternoons, often late in the week, maybe to, I don't know, just, this isn't huge news for the stock price, but you know, a lot of these things come out after the market close and so forth. And I got this email alert on Friday afternoon, and usually I'm like, oh, what is it? Is it a Form 4? Form 4 for the unacquainted are because someone has acquired or disposed of, which means sold stock. So I can kind of see that. But then I didn't see a Form 4. I saw an 8K. You know what an 8K is?
No.
I'll tell you then. An 8K is another form. An SEC form, but you have to file an 8K whenever there's some sort of something to the effect of a significant action or significant report. We can look these things up. There's Wikipedia pages and whatnot for these. But so they had to file an 8K, which disclosed the following. Go ahead.
No. I have none. Oh, you want me to? Oh, sorry. They were coming out. Oh, yeah. On November.
Read the blue slide.
World Wrestling Entertainment Inc. The company entered in a separation agreement with Christina Salen, formerly the company's chief financial officer, in connection with her previously announced departure from the company. The separation agreement. Under the terms of the separation agreement, Ms. Salen will receive a continuation of her base salary and health insurance coverage for a period of 12 months. She will be paid cash in the amount of $413,000 for certain fortified restricted stock units and will be eligible for a payment in respect of her incentive bonus for 2021 to be determined by the compensation committee of the company's board of directors and currently estimated at $431,200 in each case payable on or before March 31st, 2022. All the payments are subject to applicable employment or tax withholdings and deductions. The separation agreement contains other standardized provisions, including maintaining Ms. Salen's intellectual property, confidentiality, and non-solicitation obligations. The separation agreement is terminable by Ms. Salen until November 26, 2021.
Which was 2 days ago. So one thing that's often disclosed in the proxy statement, I'm guessing it's related to this, is that so the proxy statement is something that comes out every year. I'm sure we discussed it. It usually comes out in March, around March. I think it came out in like early April this year. But anyway, it tells you some information about the top five corporate officers. And it tells you information, including what would it cost to fire this person, essentially. It doesn't say it like that, of course, but that's essentially what they're telling you, is this is what it will cost to fire this person for cause or not for cause. I don't know. So she probably had something in her agreement already that, you know, that she couldn't just be, it's not like getting fired from McDonald's where they can just fire you and that's it. but you know, there's all these contingencies involved in it. Anyway, she's basically getting 12 months of continued pay, which is, if her offer letter is any indication, $730,000. In addition to that, she's forfeiting her stock units, which are, she's getting cash for in exchange, to the tune of $431,000. And, $413,000. The $431,200 is her estimated incentive bonus, which the board of directors probably have not determined yet because the year is not over yet, but that's probably what she'll get or something very close to that. So a great deal for Christina Salen. I wish we could all be fired as CFO for a major company like this. So yeah, just interesting to see, you know, what a company of this size, how its most prominent executives are treated financially when they are terminated. So very interesting. If you're just catching up, if you're just joining us now, the former CFO, Christina Salen, is the chief financial officer. She was apparently terminated just after the earnings call in November earlier this month, and now is being replaced by former interim, now permanent CFO, Frank A. Riddick III.
Question. Obviously, no, I think the public knowledge knows about the no competes when it comes to wrestlers, you know, talent. Mm-hmm. Do you think, and there's, and this is a speculation, I'm sure we have no idea, like somehow she became,
is she all elite? Is she all elite? That's what you're getting at, no, isn't it?
No, not at all. If she became a chief financial officer of another company before, like so let's say in 2 months, would she not be owed the rest of that money? Because they're paid in over 12 months, right? Like, would that stop payment, or?
I don't know. I mean, there's clearly a contract here that was, I don't believe, unless I totally missed it, was not disclosed as an exhibit to this filing. So that's possible. I mean, again, there is clearly an agreement, a longer document that is being referred to here that we're not seeing. That's possible. That's something that's included. I don't know, though. I doubt it, though. I feel like that's something that they would disclose. Why? Because as you were reading this, I was looking up what the actual definition of an 8K is. And according to Wikipedia, a form 8K is a very broad form used to notify investors in the United States, public companies of specified events that may be important to shareholders or to the SEC. So I feel like that, I mean, this isn't a lot of money here. We're talking about here on the scale of WWE, a company that generates $1 billion in revenue in a year. But if it were the case that if she got hired by another company, that WWE would no longer be obligated to pay her base salary and health insurance, I feel like that's something I would want to know as an investor. And that would be only, you know, it wouldn't be unfavorable or in reality, in practice or in optics for WWE if we were to know that too. But so maybe not. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Somebody who knows more about severance might be able to just answer that, to say, yeah, you forfeit your severance if you get hired by somebody else. But I don't know.
We had another question earlier when we were talking about GCW from Ryoga. Is 2,000 the maximum capacity for the Hammerstein Ballroom? If so, then it has the same capacity as Cork and Hall for New Japan and DDT. I think they scaled it a little back.
Didn't they?
There's a report here that they, yeah.
I thought I had heard, and I could be wrong, that GCW had scaled this building, scaled higher than usual.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I could be wrong, though.
I mean, that could be right. I mean, I've never been in Hammerstein. I've been in the Manhattan Center, but never the Hammerstein version.
Which is a different part of the venue. I've always been confused about what's the Hammerstein Ballroom, what's the Manhattan Center, right? Like these, there is the Manhattan Center, and then within that, there are at least two rooms that have held wrestling events. One is referred to as the Hammerstein Ballroom.
I believe it was Manhattan Center, not Hammerstein. It was in when I saw Misawa in New York City for Ring of Honor.
So. Okay. Misawa wrestled too.
That night was, if I'm correctly, I think I remember he worked that night because he did a tag match in Philadelphia. I remember it was like a four-way in Philadelphia with like him, Kenta, Mira Fuji, and more.
Misawa worked a four-way?
It was that Ring of Honor Misawa weekend that he was here, and I'm trying to remember who he worked. I want to say he worked maybe Kenta one-on-one. I'm trying to remember who he worked in singles. I remember Danielson worked Morishima that night, and that was really awesome. It was the Armory. It wasn't at the ECW, it was the Armory in Philadelphia. Then the next night was the Manhattan. So it might have been Hammerstein, but I'm pretty sure it was Manhattan Center.
But anyway, this venue, either the Manhattan Center and or the Hammerstein Ballroom, is maybe most was first known as a frequent home of Monday Night Raw in the early days of Monday Night Raw in the early 90s, right? And it's housed everything from ECW events to memorable Ring of Honor events like you're referring to. And the Joe Kobashi match was in this building. The ECW One Night Stands were in this building, I believe. Yeah. Corcoran Hall, it appears, is not quite 2,000 capacity, but something more like 1,700. It seems that the 2,000 attendance reports that have been reported as a sellout for Corcoran Hall over the years has been somewhat exaggerated by a couple hundred. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's all. Do we do a quick scan for questions or interesting comments in the chat?
And we had some interesting comments. MJ said, we nailed why a third major promotion shouldn't start. Instead, fund the indie companies with operating capital and figure out how to monetize streaming, especially with all the free agents out there. Fans will support it presented as an option. Let's see here. He also kind of commented on the sponsorship with paid ads on like Big E's Instagram. Eating Pizza Hut would be more effective integration, but they got to, pay Big E. They need to figure that out. And he was talking about this. This is actually very interesting. This is all signs that the company is peaked on growth and is now looking under the cushions of sponsorship dollars. Why not sell branding on the ring for big money? That is interesting that they have not gone in that angle yet. That we see in the NBA and NASCAR most prominently where there's advertisements everywhere. I mean, WCW did it with Slim Jim Halloween Havoc.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of shocked. There isn't a lot of branding on the ring mats and skirts.
You would think if Vince really loves his business partners, he would do that. But maybe he just doesn't love his business partners enough. I don't know.
They're not dynamic enough.
I mean, I think it's something that Meltzer has said, and I tend to believe it's true, is that Vince doesn't want to do that for whatever reason. He thinks, I mean, that's where he draws the line. There, of all places.
We did just get a question, Ramir. Why people always come back to watch WWE no matter what will happen?
I was hoping you'd read that. One of the great mysteries of our lifetimes.
It's brand identity, man. And you see that with the 50 plus. It's what you're used to. You just go back to it no matter what. I take it as like being a Buffalo Bills fan. Growing up as a Buffalo Bills fan, they've disappointed people for 20 years. People just kept coming back. It's just part of their life.
I think there's clearly a world of people who do not live in our world of wrestling conversation and analysis for whom it's not enough of a repellent. It's not enough. Whatever they're doing is not enough of a turnoff. And maybe, and God knows, there's people who love it for exactly what it is. there are people who kind of are engaged heavily online, who love it for exactly what it is, who will make a wrestler's likeness their profile picture and will quote tweet the latest ratings with a GIF of Roman Reigns hoisting the WWE championship. You know, maybe it's important to remember too that there, I mean, we're like every other wrestling podcast, just two dudes in their mid-30s who have been alive for that amount of time and are old enough to remember nationally televised wrestling when it was quite a bit different than it is now. There are a lot of people who aren't old enough to remember that. And I want to say they don't know any better. They just don't know when it was good. But they've been educated that wrestling, or at least WWE, is something different. And that's their frame of reference. And that's, I mean, if I mean, part of what Vince has done is he's sort of re-educated the audience to expect things in a different way. And again, if you haven't seen wrestling that is different, if you haven't been old enough to have watched wrestling in a prior era, or if you have not been interested, or you've not sought out other kinds of wrestling from other companies or other regions of the world, this is the universe that you know. And in my view, it is creatively, I'm talking about the content, the world of where the characters live. It seems to be a world with limited consequence and confused morality, but that's not necessarily a prohibitive, you know, it's not a reason to not watch for a lot of people, for approximately 2 million of them. And I think the changes that have happened to the wrestling product has turned a lot of wrestling fans to the WWE product, have turned a lot of wrestling fans off over time, but there's enough people that are going to stick around for this. And maybe if more people will continue to turn it off, and there'll be more attrition over time. The last 5 years, at least, of wrestling history, of viewership trends tell us that, yeah, this viewership will continue to decline, probably in a way that is a little bit more negative than the trends of television overall. But there's enough people who are not discerning a problem, or at least not enough of a problem to turn it off. And I think if you talked to a lot of people who currently watch, random people who currently watch WWE product in whatever media form, you'll probably get a lot of people who tell you that they're invested in certain characters. They're big Roman Reigns fans, or they're big Big E fans, or they're big Sasha Banks fans. And that's who and what they're invested in. And that's enough for them. In any event.
All right. All right. So yeah, plugs time.
Live TV ratings YouTube. Talk. Live TV ratings talk will be back this Friday at 5:30 PM Eastern. Just after the Dynamite ratings come out, the Dynamite ratings will be back at their normal release time by Nielsen on Thursday afternoon. And 5:30 p.m. Eastern, I'll go live right here on the WrestleNomics YouTube channel. Or if you're listening to this in pure audio podcast form, I think it's youtube.com/WrestleNomics. I think that works. If not, it's youtube.com/C/WrestleNomics. That'll take you to the WrestleNomics YouTube channel, or you can just, I guess, search for WrestleNomics on YouTube in the search bar. One of the most popular search engines on the planet, by the way, after Google, is YouTube. YouTube, Amazon. Anyway, subscribe to WrestleNomics on Patreon for $5 a month. You get access to my TV ratings reports nearly every weekday. There's a new TV ratings report. You also get access to the massive data set that is the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, plus plenty of other content that is a part of your subscription at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Thurston and at WrestleNomics. Anything to plug, Gallo?
Yeah, well, follow me on Twitter, Chris Gallo, RTI Pod on Twitter. We just released the part four of the NWA 2007-2017 deep dive for Rediscovering the Indies. So check it out if you haven't yet. We talk about Houston Wrestling Library being involved with the purchase of the NWA from Billy Corgan. Also kind of get into Billy Corgan's history in independent wrestling, running Resistance Pro Wrestling in the Chicago area, which resembled a super indie in its first couple of years, but didn't get the buzz that maybe it probably should have. So we kind of talk about that and we talk about affiliates and how the day of affiliates and the independents are probably dead, and that might be a good thing.
You're talking about syndication or like affiliate promotions?
Affiliate promotions. And what I mean by that, I don't mean like what Game Changer does and stuff. I mean like the NWA Northeast, NWA Texacoma, stuff like that. There is the AIWF that's still around, but you know, we kind of break that down and that significance and all that. So
were there affiliations other than the NWA?
Yeah, the AIWF, the Alliance of Independent Wrestling Federations.
I've never heard of that.
Yep. And then like Dale Gagner, when he was running his thing, had AWA affiliates. Technically, the United Wrestling Network is an affiliate system as well from Dave Marquez. So.
And then from there, we will talk to you all next time. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for your support on Patreon and everywhere throughout the WrestleNomics media ecosystem. We'll talk to you next time. I'm Brandon Thurston.
I'm Chris Gillo.
See you later. Bye.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.